So a recruitment is a general structure of the spin from model. So then when you would see the specific example of the causal energy model, you should be able to recognize the structure. So I erase it. Okay. We have this continuum. So we have this continuum action. Can you take over? If I put it here. How is it? So we had this continuum action. We discretized it. So I didn't discuss it, but you can show that this action has all the discrete analogs of the symmetries of this continuum action. So it's a good discretization. So our aim now is to define the partition function for that theory, which is given by a formula. We have a product. So all the links of the triangulation of the simplicial complex. And we have an integral over the Lie algebra for each of the links, OK? Because we want to integrate the triad field out. So basically, we want to realize the discrete analog of this.
Isn't
that
triad already integrated?
What? No, sorry, I mean this. We have a discrete field. So we have a discrete number of variables that we integrate over that.
Yes.
So the Lie algebra is like isomorphic to R3. So basically, there is an integral over R3 for each of the links. So I suppressed here the index just to avoid the complications with notation. So here we haven't integrated any of the fields, we just discretized them. So we replace the continuum variables with a finite or at least countable numbers of them.
So when you discretize, there's no parameter to measure sort of the smallness of this continuum. So this is not a renderization scheme.
No. This is really just we integrate. We consider a simplicial complex, so it has links connected together to form phases and tetrahedra. So we just and we consider dual. So we associate a variable to each of the links and a variable to each of the dual links. You can think of them as coming in the continuum. So if you take this simplicial complex embedded in the continuum as an integral over the links.
I've seen that question since then. How do you recover the continuum if you don't have a regularization parameter which you set to zero?
Well, the recovering the continuum is a problem for the that you would like to take to tackle from the spin-form model to recover the continuum but integral in some approximation. But here we're just setting up the theory. So this procedure. It just, I would say, instead of having continuum fields, you have this type of variables. Instead of that action, you have this. Instead of this path integrals, you write down what I'm going to write down in a second. Then you study that theory, and then you want to show that it reproduces the same results of the continuum theory. Okay. In three dimensions, everything is simplified because the distinction between continuum and discrete is a bit weak. Meaning that gravity has no local degrees of freedom. So the fact that you have discretized and you have considered only a finite number of internal links doesn't really decrease the degrees of freedom you have captured. The topology is the only thing that matters. But in higher dimensions, it will actually be a problem to be faced. OK, so you have an internal, the analog of the triad field. And then you have a product over dual links. And you will have an interlock over the group. So here just ST2. Because we have said that for each connection, we can associate a Liandro banana, obtain discretizing, so integrating over dual links the continuum connection, and then a group element corresponding to the parallel transfer of that connection along the link. Okay? So we passed here to a description of geometry in terms of a triad field and a group element. So the additive element for the corresponding to the triad and a group element, actually product group elements, corresponding to the connection. So that's the object, and then we want to discretize, we want to integrate this. Okay? That's just this action. Okay, you can show more with all the details, but I will just tell you the result. You can do the interlock over the triad, and you will be left with the following expression. So let me first rewrite this as a product over all the links of an export of that point. Okay? You understand that there are variables here, so group elements, that will appear in more than one exponential, because there will be dual links, shared by more than one dual phase, so corresponding to more than one link of the triangulation. Okay, you see this? Okay, so you do that interloop, the interloop with the triad, and you're left with the following product over links of the triangulation. Let me first write the integral there. So links of the dual, integral over the group. And then there will be a product over all the links of the triangulation. And the result of doing this integration over the triad basically gives just a delta function of g of L. Okay? Now, equivalently, I can write this on the dual, fully on the dual, so referring only to elements of the dual complex. This just means that I recall that a link of the triangulation corresponds to a dual phase. And then delta of G. And here, I mean, each of these group elements is actually given by a product over the dual links in the boundary, let's call it let's write like this. Okay. So here I just switched from writing the link of the triangulation to the dual phase. The delta function comes from integrating over the triad.
The equivalent. What does it mean? The delta function of the group element.
It means that it forces the group element to be identical.
Yeah.
So strictly speaking, okay, maybe a better notation would be something like this, delta of G minus I, but it doesn't really make sense because you don't have group elements in this. It just forces this to be, so basically this is like, this is a bit sloppy way of writing, but it's like zero for all the group elements different from the identity. And infinity for the group element being the entity distribution of the function. And that's the main.
So,
say off record? Can't be off record. Okay, so this is the object. Now, basically we have done, meaning that is this is the definition of the partition function. And this allows to compute observable compounds. You can insert functions of the connection, so function of the grouped elements, and compute the expectation values and so on. But here you don't see the spin form, the spin form formulation of it. Okay, it doesn't look like the type of sum over representations and amplitudes associated to each choice of representation labels that I've shown you before. So the way to obtain a spin form formulation from this is to expand in characters and in representation this function of the group. Now, how much do you know about harmonic analysis? A little. Fine, that's the same for me. Okay, so first of all, I tell you what the idea of the harmonic analysis is. So the expansion representation, because you know it already. So they never called it that way. And then I just tell you what the relevant formula here is. Well, if I add the delta function over x, over the real line, I can do Fourier transform. Or in other words, I can write this as an integral over dp of e to the I p x, right? And there are two part factors, whatever, that's not very important, okay? You're not worried about this, or you're not surprised about this. And so I've done just the Fourier transform of a specific function, okay? I can do it for any function of x. Now, x belongs to the real line, which is another way to call the translation group in one dimension. Okay? You can define the real line as a group, meaning that you take a point and the composition, the multiplication of group elements is given by just translations. Okay? And the p are just the representations of the translation group, representation labels for the translation group in one dimension. And you can generalize this to any dimension, of course. Well, you can generalize this idea of expansion in representations to SU2 and to other groups, more or less easily. So the analog of this formula, in our case, right there, is the following. So I have my delta over the group. And I can expand this in representations. Okay, they're just spins because we are in SU2, in the case of SU2, of the 2j plus 1. And then there is the character of the representation. Okay? Now, do you know what the representation matrix is?
What is
that?
Sorry? What is the character?
Yeah, that's why I'm asking whether you know what is a representation matrix, because a character is the trace on that. So you don't know what the representation matrix is. Okay, fine. No problem. You know about the representations of SU2, the Lie algebra, please. Just angular momentum. Okay, so you have the Lie algebra is basically Ji, and you have basis states in this. Okay, and you have a certain action of the Lie algebra elements on the states. You can, and this is basically an infinitesimal rotation, right? The Lie algebra element. You can consider a finite rotation. So you can consider something like a generic group element, let me call it, well, not a nice way of writing it, but just a generic finite rotation, which is a group element for SU2. And you consider the basis, the matrix coefficients of this group element. You can express the group element in terms of the exponential of the algebra elements. and that in turn into cosine of a certain angle plus the algebra elements with the sine at the same angle. And then you consider the matrix elements in a given representation, right? So you know you can turn a loop element into a matrix in a given representation. So this is what I call the representation matrix and prime of G. Okay? You find here? Because I can give you more details, but it is a bit far. Okay, well, the character is just the sum over M of B, J, M, G is the character in the representation J of G. So just the trace. All right? So and so, or yes? Yes, do one like that. Okay, so this is the analog of the thing that I've written here. In this case, the group is one dimensional and there's no strange measure, just this dp. And the analog of the measure there is just this 2j plus 1. It's a measure for each representation summed over. And then the analog of this e to the I ps is the character. Yeah.
I'm thinking in the case of poly spin matrices, the character would be zero.
Yeah.
Right, so you just have zero.
But that is a two-dimensional representation, yes. And that's just a spin of representation.
That's right.
Yeah. And it's not a generic group element, that's just one specific group element. So this is just the general case. Then the number that you get there will change with your representation, and then you're summing over your representation.
All irreducible representations.
All irreducible unitary representations.
Right.
Okay, so let's write down another form. Okay, no, I don't need to write an extra formula. So consider here the other a group element associated to each phase, each dual phase, or if you want to each link of the original translation. So you can expand it in representations. And consider taking this formula and placing it in here. So the object that you will have at the end, or at the end, you're still far from the end. Where is this? Function for a given triangulation, we fix the triangulation representing our space-time, not changing it for long. Okay, so the partition function will be given by a product over all the dual phases, or the sum over the representation associated with each phase. And let's put 2j plus 1 there. So that's the beginning. Then we still have product over the dual links of the integral over the group for each dual link. Then we have product over all the dual phases of the character or representation for the group element that in turn is given as a product of the dual links of group elements associated with each of the dual links. Are you with me here? So I've just taken this formula and plugged it in here. And I have written this place G, the fact that the group elements there is actually a product group elements. Now, I want to keep going there. So I write another formula that I want to write. Tell me immediately if there's something that you don't really understand about this formula. This is the character we have for each dual face. The group element is a product of a group element for each dual link on the boundary of the dual face. This character is sum. So let me forget about it. I use the convention by which I don't indicate the sum over repeated indices. Okay. So I just have something like this: m, j. I have a product on dual links. Okay. Here I've just written that as a definition of the character. Now I use a property of the representation matrices that should be obvious. Okay, it is not just think about the usual representation theory of SC2 that you know. It's just that I can write it as, suppose that I have just four of these group elements, as in the example that I erased. So you have a dual face which has only four dual links. There is a group element here. Okay? So the formula takes the expression and G L 1 G K L F R G L 2 R. And in this case we just have four of them. And then I add, for say, M, 4, okay? Are you right with this? Didn't hear anything? Are you fine with this?
Yes.
You're alive. It's a miracle after. It's 2 hours and a half. It's a miracle I'm alive. Okay, so we just write each character as a product of a representation matrices with the appropriate summation over the internal indices.
So the edge and the face, you have seen representation?
Yes, we have seen that we have just one representation for each dual face, and so and that refers to all the group elements that share that face, that bound that face. It associated to the links bound that face. Okay, so here there is another step I don't want to write all in detail. So you just take that formula, you plug it here, and then you just rearrange all this part, the partition function, per links. Here is a mixture per dual links and per faces. But you can split each of these characters into many representations, representation functions, each referring to just one of the links. And so you can write the whole thing as product of faces, dual faces, sum, j, for each face. 2j star plus 1, and then you have a product over all the dual links, an integral over the group, And then there would be three representation functions for each dual link. So F star 2, and the same group value. And okay, if there are indices here, they will all run. Well, okay, right. K1 L1, K3 L3. Now, is it clear to you why you have three representation functions for each dual link?
The J has no subscript.
Which J? There is a J for each dual phase.
Yeah.
And there are three dual phases for each dual link.
Yeah, should there be a subscript for the G star?
Well, here.
No. Inside the representation B.
Yeah, here.
Yeah, and the G.
F1, F3. Three dual phases for each dual link.
Why are there three dual phases?
Okay, no, that was the question. But then what is the question there? Okay, then I answer to the question. So each dual link corresponds to a triangle. Each dual phase corresponds to an edge of the original triangulation, a link of the original triangulation. And for each triangle, there are three links. So dual phase corresponds to a link of the original triangulation. Each dual link corresponds to a triangle. You remember the construction we had with one dual link for each triangle? So for each dual link, so for each triangle, I have three dual phases, one that goes around here, one that goes around here, and one that goes around here. To each of these dual phases, there is a different representation associated. So at the end, we have one group element for each dual link, but entering in three different representation functions for each dual link. So the integral factorizes the dual links, and it involves only three representation functions. Okay. Okay, so we are halfway to the string form representation of the original partition function. So we are here, and I want to go here. What we will do now is to do the integrals. Ladies and gentlemen, there is Professor Markopoulou and Dr. Dreyer now hiding. Okay, serious people. Okay, so now we do the integrals. So we should have an object after we do the integrals, so this part of the stuff. For each dual link, we should have something that depends on six angular momentum indices, so two for each representation matrix, and three representations. So I write it schematically, but then I'll tell you what it is. Each dual link, I have the result of the integral.
and the result of the integral can be written like this. They can't just write 1, 2, and 3. You can tickle the subscripts.
What is this object? This object is a tensor, you see, in the Hilbert space of the tree representations. So this object belongs to K3 belongs to the Hilbert space of the first representation times Hilbert space of the second times Hilbert space for the third. Okay? So you see it's a tensor. So this is an invariant tensor for SU2 in the tensor product of three representations. This is a strange way of defining something that you must know already, which is the Clebsch-Gorman coefficient. You know what the Clebsch-Gorman is. Suppose you want to it's basically you want to sum to have two representations to it, and to each of these additions there is a coefficient, a change of basis from the basis given the two initial representations to the basis labeled by third representation. It is usually written like this. And this is what I write. Okay, so the end result is simply that the integral over these three representation matrices gives a product of these two tensors with the two set of indices split. And they're tensors in the same representation basis, in the same representations. But because they're two different tensors. Actually, the same tensor, you can see a different components. Okay, so we are almost done. Now, let me draw a picture with all the risks associated with this. So we have one dual link connecting two dual vertices. Then we have others, and this would identify the dual face. Now we have, for each dual link, two objects that I can represent like this. And you can check the combinatorics if you write down all the details of this function. Some of the indices, k1, k2, k3, clearly refer to one of the vertices. Why? Because they are shared and contracted with those coming from the integrals over the other links. And here you would have k1, and then and here there would be a k4 referring to some other phase, and so on. So you can associate the two sets of indices either to one of the dual vertices or to the other. Now, each dual vertex has four dual links. You see why? Each dual vertex is a tetrahedron, so it has four triangles. And to each triangle there is corresponds a dual link. So we have a Clebsch-Gorman coefficient, so a 3J symbol, that's another way to call this object, referring to a specific vertex from each of the four dual links that end up in that vertex. So for each vertex, so so consider this one, you will end up having C, J1, J2, J3 with a certain set of indices. And then there would be another one coming from the other link, J3, but then different phases. So different representations here. One angular momentum index contracted, and the others contracted with the other four, with the other two left column that appear. One for each dual link. You see the combinatorics. So again, for each dual link, there are two of these tensors. The index K1 refers to this phase. The index K2 will refer to another phase that shares the same link. So if you consider this other dual link, there will be an index K1 that refers to the same dual phase, and therefore it is basically one of those that enter here. So it is contracted. So the K1 here will be contracted with the K1 here for the same dual phase. Okay. So for each vertex, there will be four of these fully contracted, because it basically corresponds to a tetrahedron. Each representation corresponds to a triangle. And so it's like saying that there is a C, there is a group intertwined, so there is a 3J symbol for each of the triangles. And the indices are contracted along, referring to the gluing of the triangles along the edges. Okay, so there is one index, K3, contracted among these two, because these two triangles share an edge. Hmm? Okay. Okay, so for each, what happened is that I can rearrange the same partition function, now having product of phases and sum of the representations for each phase with the measure factor 2j plus 1. And then I can consider each vertex instead and consider the four 3j symbols for Clebsch-Gordan referring to the same vertex, all contracted. So in the end, I will have a function of six representations. And there are six because there are six edges in each tetrahedron. So there are six dual phases referring to the same dual vertex, where there will be, all these indices will be contracted. So the resulting object is only a function of the representations and not of the angular momentum projections. You see this? You can safely say no, and I'll try to explain it better. So is the combinatorics that that is the problem, or? Sorry? Okay, so I go on. Well, that's basically it. Because we have a function that is just written like this, but it's a number that you can compute out of contracting these tensors, four of this in the appropriate way, to get a number which is a function of these six representations for each vertex of the dual, so for each tetrahedron of your triangulation. And then there is a factor that is also a function of the representation for each phase of the dual, so for each edge of the triangulation. And then there is a sum over representation. So the object we ended up with, starting from, well, from this and before, from the discretization of the action, from the continuum action, is just a spinform model. So do you see here the structure, the generic structure of the spinform model? The degrees of freedom that you have are these representations. And they're associated to phases of a complex. The complex we have here represents our spinform. Is the complex dual to the triangulation. So there are representations associated to phases. And then there are amplitudes for the various elements of the complex. There is an amplitude for each phase of the complex, and just 2j plus 1. And then there is an amplitude for each vertex of the complex, which is a function of the six representations referring to that vertex. And the amplitude for each edge of the dual complex is 1. So in this case, it doesn't really appear. So you see the general structure of the spinform model we have shown you earlier. So let me write it again, the general form. We call spinform model something that depends well, first we can just say that we fix a two complex, so a collection of faces, links, and vertices. We have a sum of the representations associated to the faces of the complex. And then we have an amplitude given by a product over the faces or a certain function of the j's referring to the faces. Then we have a product over the links, or an amplitude for each link of the complex. And then we have an amplitude for each vertex of the complex. It is also a function of the various of the various representations for each vertex.
What about different triangulations?
Sorry?
What about different triangulations?
Well, the amplitude would be different in general. Exactly. So here we have defined the old model on a fixed triangulation, and we obtain an amplitude, quantum amplitude, for that triangulation. In general, you would like to sum over all possible complexes to define full spinform model. And I'm going to sketch the Grove-Fertieri formula, that one way in which you can obtain a sum over two complexes, so a sum over spinforms, including a sum over combinatorial structures sigma.
What does this set really compute in the end? I mean,
sorry?
What do we really compute with the?
Well, here is the partition. With the Grove-Fertieri or with here this is just the we obtained an expression for the partition function on a given triangulation for our BF theory. So in a discrete setting, as a spinform model. So with the data that you sum over being representations, and the amplitude being an amplitude being associated to each of these triangulations, the complexes. And so it was just a sequence of equal sums. Okay, so we just started from a discretized path integral that was the discrete analog of continuum BF. And we just kept going, doing the integrals and doing the contractions and studying the combinatorics. And that's the formula we end up with. By the way, in this three-dimensional example, this amplitude turns out there are caveats, but I mean, appropriately regularized and probably fixed to not depend on the triangulation we started with, which is something we know it should be the case in three dimensions, because the theory is topological. So the only degrees of freedom that you want your partition function to capture are those characterizing the topology of your manifold. So the fact that you would characterize that topology using a given triangulation or another one is not really important. So if you triangulate a sphere, with well, three sphere with like five tetrahedra or many more, provided the topology is the same, the partition function evaluates to the same number. Okay, so it depends on the topology. Come on, more questions before I go to the theory. Oh, let me just say one thing. It doesn't look like a patinjau for grammar, does it? So the first thing you may want to ask is, where is the geometry? How do I see that this is the sum of the geometries from my rank order? Well, I tell you first the result, and then I just try it briefly. These J's associated to each link have the interpretation of the length of that link. So for each link of the triangulation, I have the J, so the representation of SC2, and the length of that link, so length of the link, is going to be given by J times J plus 1. So that now this should look like sum of geometries, because what you're doing is to define an amplitude for your space-time that is a function of the geometry. So that's the analog of this part. An amplitude that is a function of the metric. And then you define a sum over these geometric degrees of freedom being the edge length. Okay, does it look more like a sum over geometries? And you should also realize that that's the type of structure we would expect if our boundary geometries are described by spin networks, so that the geometry there is actually given by the spin labels that have the interpretation of lengths in three dimensions, of areas in four dimensions. Okay. Questions? Look alike. So you haven't received a single thing, or so roughly everything. Come on, that's the moment to ask before I go on. Can I go on?
So what would happen if that link then bends at the other line, hyperline?
So you have a link, and what's the question?
Well, the question is that I have a picture in 4D to explain that once a link in four dimensions, in three states, bends at the two surface, then the upper line two surface.
Mm-hmm.
Then the spectrum of the area of regular would be different.
Here. Yeah, okay. Here we're not in a canonical picture in which we have associated an area operator to a state. I'm just showing you how the partition function can be written as a sum over spins. And I'm telling you that the interpretation of those spins is the length.
But
it's not a canonical picture. So I never spoke here about states on boundaries on which operators act. I can derive a canonical picture out of this in the three-dimensional case. In the four-dimensional case, it's not really known. But in the three-dimensional case, I can write down first the canonical picture and then show you that the operators actually, that the length operator will have this spectrum on the link.
How?
Well, in this case, the links are just, I take two points and I connect them. There's no bending. It's a simplicial complex. So you just have a link, and then another one.
So we have fixed the triangle.
Yeah, here, from the very start, I define my discretized action on a given triangulation. Then the path integral discretized on the given triangulation. And then just wrote down all the path integrals, doing the integrals over the group and so on, up to this expression, where it looks like a spinful model. But as I said at the beginning, I couldn't just stop the first formula where there was just a delta function on the group. That is just equivalent, it's just equal everywhere.
What do you mean by length of the difficult mark with those terms?
The length of two points, between two points, that's coordinate independent. The length between two points.
What about boosts? You have a Lorentz contraction.
It's a complicated story with that. I'll give this Lorentz invariant. Lorentz invariant.
Right. So usually a length would not be Lorentz invariant.
No, wait, this is space-time length.
Oh, that's just an integral.
Yeah. So the complicated story is how to show that the picture has a Lorentz invariant built in. But the data we're putting there, this space-time interval, space-time length, not the space time. Those are non-invariant. The time intervals are non-invariant. The space-time one is.
I suppose it's the entire spinform formula and space and time are equivalent.
Well, I wouldn't say equivalent, but this is a covariant picture of some of history. So I never do any splitting, 3 plus 1 or 2 plus 1, or anything. I don't slice.
So for the plane, 2 plus 1.
Yeah.
And so this has always been 2 plus 1. Sorry. You separated the spatial manifold from the.
Here, no. This is a Lagrangian covariant formula, so not an Hamiltonian canonical one.
Yes.
So there's no splitting of my manifold into slice times something else. I really just want to define this object. So here, it doesn't involve any splitting, just define an output for my whole manifold.
Maybe I'm completely silly, but that question just gave me the thought, which you typically have if you have a Lorentzian signature. The Lorentzian signature.
You should distinguish. There is a misunderstanding. You should distinguish between writing down this object for Riemannian matrix and writing down this object for Riemannian matrix.
Yeah.
Here the signature affects only the type of geometries that I'm integrating over, but it's still a quantum mechanical theory in which I have an amplitude, complex number associated to each geometry. It's not a statistical mechanical picture in which I have a positive number, which is a probability associated to it. There's no big rotation, there's nothing, it isn't just I plus or minus whatever, I or something. Yeah. Well, this can help, I mean, many people are confused about this, even on the reserve.
So basically, you intrinsically start off in Riemannian manifold with plus.
So that just means that the configurations from some maneuver are Riemannian geometries on a manifold. Okay. How much time do we have? What do we have? Are we supposed to stop?
5 minutes.
5 minutes.
We have lecture 10 tomorrow morning, so then we have 10 minutes of 2 minutes to our hours.
Okay.
Come on, you have not 10 minutes.
Okay, so first of all, we give you two references. Well, three references, so that whatever we're not able to cover here, you can read.
Do you mind if you guys see that for lecture?
When? No, I don't mind, but I'm leaving on Saturday. I'm leaving on Saturday. I'm going back home. And, so if you want a lecture before that, fine for me. Not next week. Okay. For obvious reasons, I will refer you to Well, this is not a review, this is just my thesis, but it's quite complete. Sorry?
How many pages is your thesis?
360 or?
No, you'll find out.
Yeah.
And another very good review on the Spring from Models is the one by Alejandro.
He has a very recent one as well that's part of some textbook that you're editing.
No advertising here.
Sorry?
No advertising in the classroom.
Oh.
And so I'm not going to tell you about the book.
So you can download it off the archive in 2006.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then if you want to read about the group field theories, there is another very nice introduction that a very nice chat has written. And that is. That's short. Okay. Yes.
Sorry.
No.
How do you get back to the Lorentz signature at some point?
Don't go back to the Lorentz
signature.
Yeah,
but how do you get it? How do you want to go into?
Believe me, you can do the whole construction from the very start in the Lorentz signature.
And what are the lengths?
The lengths are also functions of the representation, so yes. But they are not
so
SO2. The group is going to be SO11, SO21, or if you want, you can use the double covering SO2R. And then you will have either continuum or discrete representations.
Yeah.
And that has the interpretation of either space life or time life links.
Okay.
So you also have length. Of this, of this link, even in terms, sorry. There is also a series of representations that has the interpretation of now links, but that's more tricky. It's less than
that's
less.
What worries me.
Sorry.
That's what worries me.
Yeah, it worries me as well. It worries many people, but I mean, the old derivation is actually known, and it proceeds exactly in the same way. You have problems in defining the contraction of free J symbols and so on, because sometimes they involve integrals over representations, and the representations are continuum. And so you have to put some care in defining all the formula. But the derivation proceeds exactly the same way. You discretize BF with the variables being in the Lie algebra of SO21. And then you keep doing, you do the integrals and so on. So the expansion of the delta, which is the basic formula that we use, the expansion of delta on the group in representations, that is the basic formula we use derived from expression, can be obtained also, can be written down, modified in the Lorentzian signature, so for SO21, and just a bit more involved technique, that's why I didn't present that one, that would be a reminder. But
In Riemannian, what's the group instead of SO31 for SO1?
Guess. So you have four tetrads, and the local gauge group is the rotation of these four vectors locally. So? SO4. Good. In the Riemannian case. SO31, so just the Lorentz group in the Lorentzian case. Okay, maybe we should just end up with a few questions. So then I don't have time to tell you anything about group field theory, unfortunately. So I would prefer you to have a better and clearer picture of spin folds in general, or at least in the specific example of it before leaving. Otherwise, your thing is useless.
I'm sure this is also so three different both sides related to the textual and
Sorry, a bit louder, I can't hear.
I'm sure I understood all those three J symbols are related to the Kershkov and Kershkov.
No, three J symbols are up to a proportionality factor, the Kershkov coefficient.
Although there is also the concept that in the contra-coronary coefficients, you're adding angular momentum.
Yeah, so but here is basically that you're...
So here there's a partition.
No, it's not clear, but the point is that what you, what the really class Gordons are the numbers in the addition, so the coefficients of change of basis. So they're just numbers which are invariant under the group, under SE2. They depend on free representations. So they're actually tensors in the representation space given by the tensor product of the free representations.
They're also sparse in the sense that many elements are zero, determining which elements, which coefficient elements are zero.
Yeah, but also this threshold, I mean, being exactly the, also these 3J symbols, according to the choice you make of J1, J2, J3, or K can be zero.
Right.
So they're really just the correct growth with, and I forgot exactly what the factor is. I think it's minus 1 to some power of J. But it's really just the correct growth.
So it seems that for the dear triangulation, that each of these elements can have an arbitrary length. Depending on the curvature of space-time. But if they're related to a patchwork coefficient, then there might be some rules.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, this is the point. I told you only at the end what the geometric interpretation of the J is. So you know that if I take a triangle and I have the length of the edges, you're actually constrained by triangle inequalities. And the J's that end up being associated to the edges of the triangle satisfy exactly the same inequalities. So the picture of the J's as representing the edge is consistent. And in fact, what you can show is that this partition function is zero as soon as the spins that you assign in the different edges of the triangulation do not satisfy the triangle inequalities. So here you sum over all possible assignments, but really the partition function is only over the consistent ones, because the angular value is just zero. And this is all encoded here. These are all properties of this.
Although it's true that the triangular inequality is dependent upon the curvature space, you don't know that it's 180 degrees, it could be bigger or less.
So here you can, no, wait. Here you can think of the triangle as being just flat. But that's just the triangle. But the curvature will arise when you start gluing all the triangles together. So you can take flat triangles, but then glue them together so that the opening is not flat. Even you know, actually, each tetrahedron can be considered as flat. But then when you start gluing them together, you obtain a non-trivial curvature. Keep going. Give me some satisfaction. Well, try harder. Very general questions, non-technical, are allowed. But okay, also technical ones are allowed.
Is it in principle possible to, from the whole Ponsano ready model to get to a continuum?
So, what you can do in this three-dimensional case is something slightly different. Because you don't really need to approximate your to use your triangulation to approximate a continuum manifold. Because as I said, in three dimensions, the fact that the space-time is discrete or continuum doesn't really matter much as far as gravity is concerned, pure gravity. Because being a theory topological, provided the complex you've chosen as the topology of your continuum manifold, then you're capturing all the degrees of freedom. So you don't need any refinement or some of the triangulations or something, strictly speaking. You may want to do it for different reasons in the Bruffield theory, but you're not forced to do it in order to capture the degrees of freedom of gravity. So the way you can show that it reproduces the continuum results is by just computing observables in this discrete setting and show that the result of the partition function with this observable inserted is equal to the same type of observables computed like with other continuum formulations of 3D quantum gravity, like transcendence theory or whatever. You can show that actually there is a perfect matching. So they know that the quantization given by this spin form model is consistent and gives the right results.
Okay, but
you cannot expect for something so nice in 4D.
So, maybe in principle, in 4D, have the issue of continuum limit that you have to go through a continuum limit.
Okay, so let me just state what the problem is in the four-dimensional case. So it's not that we lack models in the four-dimensional case. The bi-train model that I didn't have time to tell you about is a spin-form model constructed in much the same way. You have a closed expression for the amplitudes. In principle, you could just put observables and compute, or just compute the partition function, just do the sum with appropriate regularization, so make it convergent and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, you can. It's explicit. However, as I said, in four dimensions, gravity is not topological. So restricting to a single triangulation is, I wouldn't say wrong, it's just part of the answer. Because you know that you are just considering some of the local degrees of freedom of gravity, not all of them in 4D. So here there are three options. And there is a research going on in all three of them, as far as I know. One is to say, well, the Bi-Cray model that turns out to be dependent on the triangulation you started with is wrong. Maybe you need to define a better model, a different model, that just as the Ponzano-Reggio model is independent on the triangulation you're choosing. That's one avenue. A second possibility is to say, well, but what we have done, even if in the spin-form picture is not that clear, before we did all the integrals over the group, it was clearly just a type of lattice gauge theory, where the variables were group elements on the links, and we had an amplitude, a partition function, depending on these variables. So it's just a form of lattice gauge theory on a given triangulation. So we should probably do something like lattice gauge theory for gauge fields, and go for a refinement of the triangulation, appropriately defined. And appropriately defined means that because we lack any parameter setting the scale for our links, we cannot say that the refinement is defined in terms of that parameter going to zero and the complexity of the triangulation increasing and so on. At least it's very tricky how that refinement procedure would be defined. But there's people working in that direction. So we can probably take the Bi-Cray model or something like that and set up a well-defined, rigorous, and background-independent, because we don't have this parameter, refinement procedure on the triangulation. And in that way, we will recover the continuum limit. The third avenue is to say, no, the way to get rid of the dependence on a single triangulation is to sum over all the triangulations. The way in which this is done at present, so the only way that I know in which the sum of triangulations can be defined, is the group field theory. And the idea is simply that you can define field theory whose final expansion, so expansion in Feynman graphs, is a sum over triangulations. So each Feynman graph corresponds to a triangulation, a possible triangulation of space-time. So summing over all possible Feynman graphs with some Feynman amplitude is summing over all possible triangulations with a spin-form amplitude for each of them. This is what the group field theory formally gives. So this is one way to get rid of the dependence on the triangulation. And here, of course, you have many problems. That's why there is more research going on in this direction. Because, first of all, you don't know whether this sum is well-defined. And you don't know exactly what the physical meaning of this sum is. And, tell me more about that.
Isn't that what you had in hand, or did it, when you do this picture?
This picture.
You are saying that.
Yes. In fact, if you just take the canonical point of view, and which is what I've done derived in this picture, you would expect that a full spin-form model should be defined in terms of a sum over two complexes. And from this point of view, of the three avenues I've told you, the one coming from the group field theory seems to be the complete one and the most natural one. But as I said, the way I defined the spin-form model here was from a gauge theory perspective, so a lattice gauge theory perspective, so it allows for other points of view. That's why I said that the derivation I was going to give of the three-dimensional Ponzano-Reggio model was not along the lines of the canonical derivation as an evolution of spin networks. And I must say that at present, most of the work is done in this context, not in the canonical dictionary. And relating the two is not straightforward.
What is the form of the condition which comes from the canonical?
Oh, well, the derivation, as you may have noticed, the derivation that I gave was very formal. That's one thing. But let me answer to a different but related question. Suppose that I do have a spin form model that comes from a lattice gauge theory derivation, or a group field theory derivation, for that matter. So I have something like this. Can I write down a canonical description for the same type of states and for this type of evolution? That's the question is actually being tackled. I mean, people are thinking about that. And there are two main differences in the... So one is the fact that if you start from a lattice gauge theory perspective, the spin networks that you get on the boundary are dual to d minus one dimensional triangulation. So in this three-dimensional context, they are dual to triangles glued together. You get the boundary of your space-time, right? That means that the vertices are trivalent, fixed. You cannot consider different values. You know, all vertices of the spin networks of the boundaries refer to triangles. That's one limitation, in a sense, because in the usual canonical formulas, a spin network can be arbitrary values, can have arbitrary values. That's one difference. But that's not the real crucial one. You can explain why that's the case and still make a link between the canonical and the correct. It's just the first difference. In four dimensions, the group is the full Lorentz group in the spin form models that are known explicitly. Well, loop quantum gravity, as you know from these lectures, uses SU2, either complex SU2, so the complexified version, and that's equivalent to the full Lorentz, but you need to impose reality conditions and so on, or it results from a gauge fixing, so it's the real SU2, and then it's just a subgroup of the full Lorentz group. So that's a big difference, because the representation theory of the two groups is completely different. In the full Lorentz group, in the Lorentzian case, you have continuum representations and discrete representations. While SU2 is just discrete representations, also in 4D, right? So the canonical states that you will have on the boundary for your spin form in four dimensions will be spin networks that will have a fixed balance. That's the first difference. Second difference is that the links will be labeled by representations of the Lorentz group, which can be continuous, as well as discrete. So that it's a different representation structure than the canonical loop quantum gravity one. And relating the two is not trivial. I mean, some things are known on this and others are not. We're not completely lost, because your questions are really on the current research topics, so it's good. Yeah, one more.
On the question of what you mind, could you ask next lecture before we disappear to Cambridge?
I'm happy to give another lecture, and here I'm really lying. But I can give you a lecture. No problem. I don't think that we would object. No, as I said, I'm leaving on Saturday, so it can be either tomorrow or Friday. Sorry?
You'll have to be exactly the same time. Just convenient for you.
Any time is convenient for me, except tomorrow at 1, because there is a seminar. So, no, if you want an extra lecture, then I'm happy to tell you about group field theories. That is really something I'm excited about recently.
Friday,
yeah.
Why not
Friday?
Fine.
Sure. No problem. No, I'm just kidding. Friday is perfect. Just when? Just avoid lunchtime and dealing because I have to play football.
As
what do you call soccer?
Between lunch and after lunch and cheese, pie and cheese.
Yeah,